Pavel Vicks Porsche in Parashat Vayakhel. But on this Shabbat, after we finish reading Parashat Vayakhel, we have two Sifrei Torah taken out before the reading, and we read in the second Sefer Torah from another Chumash, from Chumash Bamidbar, what we call Parashat Parah. We already discussed this year one of the parshiyot that are added at the end in one of those four Shabbatot. We said there are four Shabbatot in Adar, in the month of Adar, where instead of reading the regular maftir, which is repeating the last few verses of the parasha again, we take out another Sefer Torah and read something from another Sefer. And the Shabbatot are called on this part that is read. We mentioned Parashat Shkalim, we discussed it. Parashat Zachor is before Purim. Then we have Parashat Parah and Parashat HaChodesh. So this Shabbat, in addition to Parashat Vayakhel, we'll read Parashat Parah instead of repeating the last few psukim of Parashat Vayakhel. And I want to concentrate today on Parashat Parah. Parashat Vayakhel in general speaks about the fact that the Jewish people fulfilled the obligations that Hashem said to bring donations for the building of the Mishkan, and then he discusses how it was done, the fact that it was done by the Jewish people exactly the way Hashem commanded them. We won't discuss this today. What we will discuss today will be the additional part that is read, Parashat Parah. Parashat Parah is in the Chumash on page 839. Before we go into the Parasha itself, as I said, we have four special Shabbatot where we read a special paragraph in addition to the Parsha. But those four Parshiot are spread at least on five Shabbatot, and sometimes six, what means that there will be one or two where we will read Parsha as usual and won't have a special edition. So we have five Shabbatot and four portions. So where do we take the break? Do we read four consecutively and the fifth is without anything? No. What we do is we read two. We read Shkalim and Zachor, both before Purim. Then we have a break, and then we read Para and HaChodesh. Usually, it depends on how the calendar works, if Rosh Chodesh is on Shabbat or not, but basically it's Shkalim, Zachor, break, Para and HaChodesh. There is an opinion though that Parah and Zachor should be connected to each other, and then a break, and then Parashat HaChodesh. We don't do it in this way. We take the break after Parashat Zachor. Shkalim, Zachor, break, Parah and Chodesh. But still, there is an opinion that it has to be differently. We know that in the Torah, an opinion that has no basis for it is not recorded. In the oral law, something that a sage said and is not correct, doesn't go together with all the other things that are written, won't be recorded. What is recorded is what our sages want all of us to know all along. Now, there are different opinions. What we'll do practically will be only one, going by majority. But it's recorded for all generations that there is other opinions, because these other opinions shed more light on the topic. They have a basis. They are said because there is a reason. So what we do practically is we break between Zachor and Parah. Parah is connected to HaChodesh. But there is an opinion that Zachor and Parah come one after the other, and we will have to explain it because it seems that there is no connection on a superficial level. Why? Zachor speaks about Amalek. It's definitely connected to Purim. Haman came from Amalek. What is Parah all about? Parah, as we'll see soon, is an obligation to go through a purification process before we bring the Pesach offering. Because a person who is impure cannot go into the Beit HaMikdash and will not be able to bring the offering of Pesach. So before Pesach, we have to purify ourselves via the ashes of a red heifer. We'll see more details soon. So it seems that Zachor is connected to Purim and Parah is connected to Pesach. So the break between the two makes a lot of sense. We finish with Purim, we take a break, and then we read two things that are connected to Pesach. The Parah, the way to purify for the Korban Pesach, and then the obligation of Korban Pesach, which is a Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, the next week we'll read about establishing the month of Nisan as a preparation for the giving of the offering of Pesach. So the question is, what's the basis for the opinion that says, even though Parah is connected to Pesach and Zachor is connected to Purim, let's connect them and read them Shabbat after Shabbat, and only then take a break? This is the question that we are putting in the beginning of the class, and we'll come to the answer hopefully at the end of the class. So we are looking for the connection between Parashat Zachor and between Para, between Purim Pesach, Parashat Zachor, Amalek, right? And the purification as preparation for the offering of Pesach. So before we go further, I want to look in the Chumash just very, very generally to know what Parashat Parah is all about, right? So as we said, it's on page 839. I'll skip a lot, just give the basics. Okay, so Hashem spoke to Moses and to Aaron saying, this is the decree of the Torah, which Hashem has commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel and they shall take a completely red cow, which is without blemish and upon which a yoke has not come. So a parah, a cow with specific requirements has to be taken. The main one, it has to be red, right? A red heifer, it's called, right? And what is done with it? You shall give it to Elazar the Kohen, and I'm saying orally without reading, he takes it out of the Jewish camp, he burns it, he slaughters it, he burns it, and then Elazar the Kohen shall take some of its blood, I mean four, with his forefinger, and sprinkle some of its blood towards the tent of meeting seven times. And then somebody has to take the cow, burn it, right? Flesh, its flesh and its blood with its dung, okay? All will be burned, okay? And then they take a vessel, right? I'm sorry, they take a cedar wood, hyssop, crimson thread, and he shall throw them into the burning of the cow. And then he put it in water, right? If you look later on, okay? He takes, we are in number 9, the next page, 841, right? Somebody has to gather the ashes, put it in a pure place, right? And it is there in order to be sprinkled of people who are contaminated because they were in touch with the corpse or under the same roof with the corpse, okay? So the ashes are put into pure water and these waters are sprinkled on people. It's a process of 7 days, sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day. And in this way, the person becomes pure and he can enter the Beit HaMikdash and bring the Korban Pesach, okay? That's very, very general, right? What is done with this red heifer? It's a way to prepare ashes that will be put into pure water and be sprinkled on people who are impure, and this makes them pure. Now, the portion starts with the following verse, verse number two, the beginning. This is the decree of the Torah. It's a chok, as it's called in Hebrew, something that we don't understand. Our sages tell us that the only one who understood the reason for para, who is able to understand the reason for this mitzvah, is Moshe Rabbeinu. Only Moshe. Even King Solomon was the wise of all wise people, the wisest of all wise, right? When it came to Parah Adumah, he said, this I cannot understand. It's only Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why we call it a decree, a chok, a mitzvah that we don't understand. The question is, what's so not understood in this mitzvah that it will be singled out from all mitzvot of the Torah and will be called a chok? What makes it the decree of all the mitzvot of the Torah? There are other things that we don't understand. We don't understand shatnez. We don't understand why we cannot combine meat and milk. There are other things, but this is the example and the most famous one that is called chok. And the Torah makes it the most famous by saying this is the decree of the Torah. So the common answer to it is that we see a seemingly contradiction, because the people who prepare the ashes, the one who burns it, the one who slaughters it, become impure. And when it's sprinkled on a person who is impure, it becomes pure. So either it's something that makes pure or makes impure. What's this combination? This makes it a chok. But this is not enough as an explanation, because there are other things that have opposite effects. I'll give an example. Medication. You give it to the sick, it's wonderful. It will heal him and give him life. You'll give it to the healthy, you might cause him death. Sunshine can make things white, right? If you put the laundry, hang the laundry in the sun, it will become white. But we know that the skin becomes dark from the sun. So it is an explanation. Of course, our sages bring it, but it's not the only one. We need to dwell deeper into it in order to understand what is so beyond comprehension in this mitzvah of the ashes of the red heifer. So, in order to understand it, we have to understand purity and impurity. The impure becomes pure via this water with ashes of the red heifer. So what is purity? What is impurity? In Hebrew, purity is tahor. A pure person is tahor. And an impure person is tameh. So we have to see what's the meaning of these roots, tet hei resh tahor, or and tet mem aleph tameh, impure. So there are other words that are close to tahor, tet hei resh. One of them is tzohar. Tzohar is a window. Tzohoraim is translated as tahara, meaning there is a connection between these two words. What's the specialty of the middle of the day, Tzohorai, the midday? The light is very strong. It's very easy to see and differentiate between things. Seeing is easy. Tameh comes from atum, opaque. It's something that blocks the ability to see. So it's two opposites. The tahor has an opening to seeing things, and the tameh is blocked from seeing things. What are they blocked of, or what are they able to see? The presence of the divine, godliness. When a person is tahor, he can cling to Hashem. It's like open. The gate that leads to clinging to Hashem is open. On the other hand, when a person is impure, it like creates a blockage and it's impossible to penetrate. Okay? It's impossible to penetrate. So that's the difference between Tameh and Tahor, Tahor and Tameh. Tahor can be connected to Hashem easily. Tameh can't. He has to purify and then he can connect. Now, what is the cause for impurity? A person can become impure in many different ways, but the root of all impurities is death. Death is called in Hebrew Avi Avot Atumha. The root of all roots of impurity, meaning the first cause of impurity. That's this. Now, we know that when the world was created, there was no death. First man was supposed to live forever. The Jewish people at Matan Torah were supposed to live forever. As a result of the sin of first man and later on of the golden calf, what happened was that the Jewish people became removed, the same way first man removed from the closeness to Hashem. So it was like a wall between them and the ability to connect and cling to Hashem. This is what death is doing. There is a verse in Dvarim that says, Machatzti va'anirpa. I killed, I crushed, and I will heal. Machatzti. When Yael killed Sisra, the term used is machatza et rakato. She crushed his head, right? She crushed his brain. So Hashem says, machatzti. I brought death upon you from people, but I will heal. Then the resurrection of the dead will take place and there will be no death anymore. What's the term used here for death? Machatzti. Right? It's not written, I killed, or I decreed death. It's written, machatzti. And our sages say the following. Our sages say, machatzti is also leshon mechitza. From the same root, we have another word, mechitza. We know a mechitza in the shul, it separates between the men and the women, right? So mechitza is a separation. It's something that blocks you from seeing and connecting to what's happening on the other side. So as we see, this is described as a disconnect between Hashem and the Jewish people. And the question is, how could we, in our stage, after the sin, be able to get out of it and become pure again? That's the question about Faradima. This is what makes it into a chok, into something that we don't understand. It's the root of all impurities. It's the root of all distance that is created between Hashem and people, to the extent that a person who was in touch with death cannot come into the place where we get closer to Hashem, the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is a place where we bring korbanot. What's the purpose of a korban? It comes from karov, to connect to Hashem. A person who is impure cannot come in there, which means he's really distant. So is there a way to get out of it? Can a mortal being be connected to the source of all life? Hashem is Mekor HaChaim, the source of life. How could we, after the sin of first man, after the sin of the Egel, connect to Hashem? And what does this para do in order, the ashes of this para do, in order to connect us to Hashem after we were impure and give us purity? Open up our eyes to see and connect to Hashem. So this is what we want to explore today. Okay? And eventually it will give us the answer to the questions that we raised about the connection between Para and Zachor. Okay, so I want to refer you to a pasuk in Job, right? As we know, Job had terrible difficulties and terrible suffering, and a group of his friends came to share in his pain and feel with him, to show empathy. And he spoke, and he had questions, and they rebuked him for the fact that he speaks the way he speaks. They felt that what he says is not proper to say to God, to Hashem, and they rebuke him. And he responds, and in one of his responses, he says the following. I read the pasuk first in Hebrew and then I'll translate. It's very difficult Hebrew. Without commentaries, we can't understand it, but I'll translate. Zichronchem, Mishlei Efer. Your remembrance is likened to ashes. Gabechem. And your stature to lumps of clay. That's what he says. He wants to rebuke them. He wants to tell them, who are you to rebuke him? So what does he say about them? What he says about them is that what can be remembered of them, meaning their past, is like ashes, meaning it's meaningless. Their past is like ashes, something that is burned and become ashes, it's nothing. There's no value. So your past is nothing. And your stature is like lumps of clay. Clay, earth, dust, not valuable. That's the plain explanation of the person. But why would he use this to tell them that they should not rebuke him, that they are not worthy of doing it? So Rashi says something very, very interesting. Rashi says the following. I'm quoting. You think that you are like Avraham that said, I am earth, dust, and ashes. This pasuk mentions, describes them as people that their memories, their remembrance is like ashes. Verb ashes is here, and the stature are like clay, earth, and it creates an association with another pasuk. When Abraham pleads with Hashem for the sake of the people of Sodom, he says, I am asking you to save them, even though who am I? Afar, ba'efer, dust, earth, and ashes. So Rashi says, Yov tells these people, what do you think? You're like Abraham, you're great people. You have the right to come and rebuke me. You're not like him. Very interesting, right? Now, the Midrash gives us more insight about this pasuk, and it will connect it to what we are learning today. Midrash Tanhuma says the following: Hashem said to the Jewish people, "You have two things in the Torah that you have to remember. One is Timche et Zecher Amalek." Erase the memory of Amalek. That's one obligation that we have, to remember Amalek, erase its memory, and Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Two times the Torah tells us, remember Amalek. Remember what he did to you, and remember to erase his name from under the earth. So the Midrash quotes the pasuk from Job that we just spoke about. Tell Job telling his friends, your remembrance is like ashes, right? And the Midrash says, you are like ashes. But now the Midrash turns it into something positive. The Midrash says, if you merit, meaning if you do if you remember Amalek and you remember to what he did to you and to erase him from under the sun, then you are the children of Abraham. Abraham that made himself like ashes. When he said, I am dust and ashes. Very interesting. So what does the Midrash tell us? The Midrash tells us, if you remember to destroy Amalek, You can be compared to Abraham. You are like Abraham, who said about himself, I am dust and ashes. So the Pasuk speaks about ashes, right? So Yov tells his friends, you are not like Abraham, who said about himself that he is dust and ashes. But the Midrash says, you, Jewish people, can be like Abraham, who said about himself that he is dust and ashes, earth and ashes. How? By remembering what Amalek did to us and destroyed him. Very interesting. What's the connection? Right. We'll explain. But first, let's see the sources. I want to bring one more source. The Talmud says the following. In the merit that Abraham said, I am earth and ashes, afar va'efem, his children got two mitzvot. The mitzvah of the ashes of the red heifer and the earth, the dust of sota. We have two mitzvot where we have to take something and put it in water. One is the ashes of the red heifer. We put it in ashes, as we explained before. We sprinkle it on people who are impure and they become pure. That's one mitzvah. It's done with ashes. There is another mitzvah of isha sota, a woman that her husband is suspicious that she was not loyal to him, that she committed a sin. She denies, and he has the ability to clarify if she did it or not. If she said, I did it, what I'm going to explain will not be done because it's clear and there are consequences to it. They cannot continue to live together, whatever. That's something. But if she says, no, I didn't do it, we want to check if she's saying the truth or not. So she's brought to the Beit HaMikdash. It's a whole procedure, but part of it is that earth from the Mishkan is put into pure water. She has to drink it. If she committed the sin, she'll die from the drinking. And if not, she won't die, and many, many blessings will come upon her. So these two mitzvot are the reward of Avraham Avinu, who said, I am dust and ashes. So what did we connect up till now? We connected. We want to explain the connection between Parashat Para and Parashat Zachor. Even though they seem to be one connected to Purim and one to Pesach, and there should be a break, right? As we do practically, but there is an opinion that it's not like this. So we found a place in Iov that the Midrash brings here in the story of Parah Aduma. Yeah. And the Midrash says, if you destroy Amalek, you are the children of Abraham who said, I am dust and ashes. And our sages say, two mitzvot were given to us because Abraham said, I am dust and ashes. The Parah and Sota. So we have a connection between Amalek, Abraham Avinu who said, dust and ashes, and the mitzvah of Parah. That is also in the merit of Avraham Avinu saying, I'm dust and ashes. So this has to be explained. So let's see. I know it's a little complicated, but the idea that comes after is so powerful and so beautiful that I thought it's worthwhile. And I hope you got the sequence of, you know, thought. Okay. So let's see what Afar is and what Ether is. Ashes and earth, dust. What are the two of them? From what we read up till now and said up till now, it seems that there are two things that have no value, right? They are free of charge. You cannot make anything from ashes, right? You can take off it. Nobody keeps it, right? It has no value to it. Earth, also, it's free. You can take as much as you want. Everybody steps on it. What is earth? But there is a difference between ashes and between earth. Ashes is an indication of something that had value, but it has no more. mit Edwein. Der war sehr kalt. After it was burned, die Zeches. Right? You look at Los Angeles after the fire. Endless money became into nothing. Worthless. Right? So it's something that was valuable, and now it's with no value. Earth is also with no value. It's not sold in the store. You can go out and pick up. But Earth has a future. Because if you put a seed in the earth, it will grow and give very valuable things. Right? So while ashes symbolize a past that is no more, earth symbolizes a future. It has something in potential. Earth is basically potential. That's how the Maharal explained why in Hebrew man is called Adam. And he explained, the Torah explains it because he was taken from earth. It indicates the fact that man has potential, was created this potential. Potential for what? For ongoing growth. Okay? Ongoing growth. Now, if you will look at what happens when things grow from earth, we put one seed in the ground, one seed. It gives us a tree, but it doesn't give us only a tree. In the tree, part of the tree, are many, many seeds that from it we can plant many, many trees, that each one can grow many, many trees, and so on and so on and so on. So earth basically indicates endless potential. Endless potential. So we said that Abraham Avinu said, I am earth, dust, afar, and ashes. Why did he use the two terms and what does it mean? The explanation is very, very beautiful. We understand Abraham saying, I am earth, meaning, who am I? I am potential. What means that all my life, I have to produce new things, and it's endless. That's looking at the future. Abraham Avinu, though, did a lot of good. If he would look backwards to his past at any point in his life, there is a lot to record, a lot of unbelievable things. So why does he say about himself, I am ashes? His past is meaningful. It's not nothing. But what it indicates is Abraham's approach towards his good deeds. I want to illustrate it by a story. The story goes about Rabbi Akiva Eiger, was one of the biggest sages of his generation a few hundred years ago, about 400 or 500 years ago. The story goes that on Simchat Torah, you know there are two people who are appointed chatanim, right? Chatan Torah and Chatan Bereshit. One person who gets the last aliyah, comes to the reading of the Torah for the last part of the Torah, is called Chatan Torah. And then we start Bereshit right away, so there is somebody else who gets the first aliyah of the second reading. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger, usually it's given to the most important, the greatest scholar in the synagogue. Where he was the scholar, not only in his synagogue, he was one of the greatest scholars of the generation. He received this aliyah on Simchat Torah to finish the Torah, and it's called Chatan Torah. It's like the broom of the Torah connected to the Torah, a scholar, right? It's an honor. So he came up, and before he started to say the blessing, he started to cry very much, and it was very bewildering. Simchat Torah, it's a very happy day, and coming up to the Torah, such a big honor, what's the point of crying? So after, they asked him, why did he cry? So he said, I'll give you a parable. Let's say a person is walking in the desert, and is far away from any people. It will take him a while to get to a place where there are people. And he discovered a treasure of unbelievable pressure, stones, coins, enormous treasure. So he wants to take it with him. But he's in the desert. All he has is himself, one bag, and a few packets. So he fills it up to capacity and he walks away. How does he feel? On one hand, he feels very lucky, right? He got such a treasure. On the other hand, he leaves it behind, right? And so much is left behind. What he took is nothing in comparison to what was left behind. So said Rabbi Akiva Eiger, I am coming to the Torah. It's an indication that I studied. But when I look at what has to be studied, I ask, am I the right broom for this bride? What do I know of the Torah in comparison to what there is to know? In comparison to the way we can connect to it, I accomplish nothing. This was Abraham's attitude towards himself. At all his accomplishment, he looked as nothing, but not because he didn't value it. He invested in it because he appreciated it. But in comparison to his potential and his ability to get more, this was considered ashes, nothing. He always saw himself as the beginning of the journey and motivated to go further and do more. That's the meaning of the term that Abraham says, I am dust and ashes, afar v'efer. Now, who is the opposite of it? That's Abraham's approach to life. There is another approach to life, the opposite one. And this is Esav, the father of Amalek. The name Esav, like all names in the Torah, indicate the essence of Esav. So we know Esav is wicked. We know Esav caused so much pain and trouble all through our history. How is his name indicating who he is? What is explained is that the word Esav indicates that he was born with nails and hair that are grown. What symbolizes the concept that he viewed himself always as fully developed. He was happy with what he was and was just what he was without developing further and further and further. The opposite approach of Yaakov Avinu, of Avraham Avinu. Now, when we compare these two approaches to life, one is only a past, and one has a future. If a person feels that he is exactly what he has to be, no need for development, no need for growth, he's happy with who he is. So he'll dedicate his life to things that are really leading to death. The present is not going to stay. Today is here, and in a while he'll die. There is nobody who escapes death. And when this person will die, he'll have nothing. It's all ashes. It's gone, and it has no value. The way to be attached to life, to be pure, is to live with this attitude of, I am here to create a future. And this is what Abraham did all his life. A person like this will die too. Abraham Avinu died also. Everybody dies till the resurrection of the dead. But when Abraham Avinu dies, it's not the end, it's the beginning. It's the beginning of an ongoing growth. Our sages say the righteous after their death are called alive. They're not dead. They continue to grow and develop. It's like they put seeds here in this world and in the world to come, it grows into trees who have seeds, who create new trees and new trees and new trees, meaning they will constantly see more, understand more, connect more to Hashem. Meaning, in other words, they are always alive. Now, this is hinted in the Torah in a very beautiful way. In the beginning of the Torah, and I want you to see it, it's in the beginning of Bereshit, Perek Bet, chapter 2, okay, it's page 11, chapter 2 of the Torah, right after creation, verse number 4. The Torah says, these are the products of the heaven and earth when they were created in the days that Hashem God made earth and heaven. So this pasuk speaks about the products of heaven and earth. Hashem created heaven, created heaven and earth. What are the products of this world? So on the simple level, let's see what history tells us. And right after, the Torah starts to tell the history of mankind from a Torah perspective. Not all history, right? But it's based on what people did, accomplished, or destroyed all through their life. But if you look at the Hebrew, when they were created, is the Hibar'am. Ele toldot ha-shamayim ve'aretz be-hibar'am. The root is bara, to create. Be-hibara means when they were created. If you look at this word, you'll see that it's the same letters, if you change the order, es be-avraham. You want to know what are really the products of heaven and earth? It's Avraham. Why is this hinted in a word that means creation? Because this was the life of Avraham. He was always busy creating new realities, new spiritual realities, developing himself and helping others to do it. This is Avraham, and this is real life. And even when a person like this dies, he's still alive. Till today, we all know him, we all talk about him, he's with us. We have of him in us, he's alive. And he's constantly growing up there. That's real life. Parallel to Esav, who is ashes only. Because all he has is the moment, and any physical joy after it's over, it's nothing. There is no remnant of it. Spirituality, when we invest in it, is with us, it develops us. As long as we exist, it exists and goes further and grows and motivates us to grow more. Physicality, you had the meal, you ate it. What's left? Nothing. Okay? So, we understand that life means a connection to Hashem, and it means renewal, constant renewal. And we said, a person can always be alive. He will still die, practically, like all people die, including Abraham, but it's not expressing the essence. There was a decree that everybody will die and will come back to life at the time of the resurrection. But Avraham is an alive being all along. While Esav, even while he is alive, is basically dead because he's every day walking towards nothingness. That's really Esav. So let's go further. What do we do in the mitzvah of Parah Aduma? So I want you to look back to page 8:41. We are told that it has to be burned, and in verse number 4, sorry, 9, the Torah says, Kaf of 8:41, verse number 9. A pure man shall gather the ash of the cow. So we have ashes here. But if you look further down, verse number 17, the Torah tells us, they shall take for the contaminated person some of the ashes of the burning of the purification animal. In art scroll, they wrote ashes. But if you look in the Hebrew, it says afar, earth. I don't know why they translated it into ashes. Okay? I understand why, because it's the earth of the burning animal. Burning animal are ashes, but the Torah calls it afar, earth. So in the story of Parah Adumah, we have two terms. We have ashes, and it's repeated a few times, but it's these same ashes are also called earth, afar, meaning here is a meeting point between nothingness and constantly creating a future. Parah Adumah is the way Hashem gave us to get out of the impurity caused by death, meaning coming out of this blockage that happens when we become impure. It seems impossible to get out of it. But the Torah tells us, no, you Jewish people can get out of this blockage even by being in this world. After the sin of first man, after the golden calf, we still can connect to Hashem. We can purify ourselves. How? By viewing ourselves as Abraham did, as dust and ashes. Whatever I accomplished up till now, I don't give to it too much to the extent that I'll be satisfied and stop working. I value it. I'm not saying it's nothing. Every good thing I did is very important. But I am not just complacent and saying I achieved already. I achieved. See how much there is still to achieve. And starting to work again and again and again in order to create more. If we live a life like this, we are really like Abraham. It's no wonder that our sages connect the merit of Abraham to this mitzvah of the red heifer, because the message is the same message. Now, our sages say also we got another mitzvah in the merit of Abraham. And what is the other mitzvah? The waters give earth from the Mishkan, from the Beit HaMikdash, that the woman that is being suspected to be a sinful woman has to drink. So we have again water and we with earth, but the earth comes from the Mishkan. And there is something very interesting here that resembles the Efer Parah. And that's why that connects it to the Efer Parah, connects it to Abraham Avinu. If a person sins and does not want to admit, basically, he will not correct his past. So his past are really ashes. He's physically alive, but he's really dead. Because if we don't recognize our mistakes and don't correct them, we are not alive people. We are not connecting to Hashem. We are not attached to the source of life. We are tame. We are impure. There is a blockage between us and between Hashem. But what happens if she did not commit a sin? She is pure. What the Torah tells us is the following. I want you to open up the story of the Sota, open please at page 755. And look at verse 17. Okay, so verse 17 tells us that the Kohen shall take sacred water in the earthware vessel, and the Kohen shall take from the earth that is on the floor of the tabernacle and put it in the water. And he gives her to drink it, and the Pesukim later on say that if she committed a sin, she will die, right? But if you look at verse 28, page 757, what happens if she didn't commit a sin? But if the woman had not become defiled and she is pure, then she shall be proven innocent and she shall bear seed. And our sages say if she didn't have children till now, she'll have children. If she had one child, she'll have no twins. Many blessings will come upon her. Because what happened? The impurity, the suspicion is gone. It's not by an accident that her husband was suspicious. She did certain things that were not right. But she didn't do the worst of all, right? She's still loyal to her husband, even though she behaved immodestly. So by coming to the Beit HaMikdash and drinking this water, her purity is proven. The Kohen speaks to her. She does tshuva. And then a blessing will be upon her, like by Abraham, right? One seed creates many. She will start a life that is attached to life, and one seed will create many. Okay? So we asked, why is it that there is an opinion that we have to connect Amalek, the reading of Amalek, to the reading of Parah? It's clear that Amalek is connected to Purim and it has to be read before. It's clear that Parah is connected to Pesach because it enables people to be able to come to the Mishkan and bring korbanot. When they are impure, they cannot come in. So Parah is connected to Pesach. If we have a Shabbos off without a special reading, let's separate between Purim and Pesach. But there is an opinion that says no, these two are connected. Because it's the destruction of Amalek in us, the attitude that I'm fine and I can be complain certain and I don't have to grow, that creates the impurity. And if we are there, if we did not destroy Amalek, we need the lesson of the Parah. And if we destroyed Amalek, we can attain the purity of Parah. We want to say that one depends on the other. There are two opinions, two attitudes to life. The attitude of Amalek, I'm fine, right? I'm even a god. That's what Nimrod said. I'm God, right? Paro said, I am God, right? Haman thought he is God. Everybody must bow down to him, right? That's Amalek. Why? Because he is who he is and he is fine. And that's why there is no growth and that's why there is no past. And when there is no past, there is no present and there is no future. The moment the present becomes past, it turns into ashes. But if we destroy Amalek, meaning if we don't live with this attitude, if we adopt the attitude of Abraham Avinu, we become pure. This is written in, or hinted in a pasuk in Tehillim that we say in Hallel each holiday. Lo amut ki yechia. It seems a repetition. I won't die. I will be alive. Isn't it the same? If I don't die, I am alive. So the way it is explained is, I won't die. Why? Because I'll be alive. Because we, mortal beings, can surpass death. Physically, we'll die. But by our actions, we continue to live even after 120, and we'll come back to life at the resurrection of the dead, and we are alive all along because we are in a process of growth, a process of new creations all along. In this world, as a result of our choices, and in the world to come, as a consequence of our choices. To the extent that we recreate ourselves constantly here, to this extent, we will be alive in the world to come and at the time of the resurrection of the dead. So I am not dead. Why? because my life is a life, because I'm fully alive, because I understand that I'm here in order to create, in order to do. When we do this, when we read Parashat Para and internalize and work on what Parashat Para teaches us, we are ready to Parashat HaChodesh. Parashat HaChodesh is our connection to Yetziat Mitzrayim. We purify ourselves, we set up the month of Nisan, so we can bring the offering of Pesach and celebrate Pesach. What is Pesach? Pesach is what we describe now on a national level, national and individual. On a national level, we were created on Pesach. We came out of death on Pesach, of being slaves to different things, to 49 gates of impurity, and developing 49 gates of purity. That's coming out of Mitzrayim. Coming out of Mitzrayim is not the physical freedom that we gained. It's walking towards the receiving of the Torah, which gives us the real life, the instructions for life, and the connection to life. So after we destroy Amalek and we create a life with the attitude of Abraham, of the past is very nice. We don't nullify it. But it's only the beginning. Always at the beginning. Always at the threshold. And we have to create again. And that's why we always have to see ourselves as coming out of Egypt. We came out of Egypt already. 37 years ago, we came out of Egypt. What does it mean every life to see myself as if I came out of Egypt? There is always a new beginning waiting for me. I always can recreate more, create myself, take my potential and develop it further, and I can contribute to others what, so they will be able to do. So I'm constantly coming out of Egypt. It's an ongoing process. That's why we have to remember Egypt every day. It's an obligation. It's one of the fixed things that we have to remember every day. It tells me, you can be a person with a life, always. Who always recreate. And in this, we are like Hashem, He's the creator, and He gave us the ability to create ourselves and to bring the world to the fulfillment of its potential. So there is an opinion that you have to connect Para to Amalek. We don't do it practically. We separate between the two things that have to be read between Purim and the two that are towards Pesach, and in between we have a Shabbos without any reading. But the people who say, the sages who say, connect Para to Amalek, teach us a lesson. And that's why it's written, even though we don't do it. We separate between Amalek and between Para. But there is a sage who says, connect. This teaches me more depth into the two things and the process of these four Shabbatot that prepare me for Pesach. So we are given a month, the whole month of Adar, and then the time of Nisan, to prepare for Pesach. Not only physically. Obviously, there is a lot that has to be done for Pesach in order to fulfill the obligations that the Torah gives us regarding Pesach. But obviously, the main preparation should be inside us, to bring ourselves to a point where we are always alive, always create, like Abraham, Behibaram, when we look on the past as wonderful, but only a beginning. And there is an endless future for us, and we can develop it to the extent that we are ready to work. Okay, we'll finish here and open up. By the way, that's a class of Moshe Shapirazich.
Before we open for questions, this class is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Meira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai. We will open up for classes for questions. Yes, you can unmute yourselves now.
Okay, I just wanted to comment. Then when we quote a Chazal or quote anything in Torah, we're saying Hillel Omer, Rashi Omer. It's always saying now. It's saying to us. It's not past.
Again. I didn't understand.
Okay, I was saying that when we're learning Chazal or we're learning Rashi. So he's saying Rashi Omer. It's not Rashi Omar. It's past
Very
and
good.
present. It's a
Feel
lot.
different. When we quote our sages from previous generations, like Rashi, what she's saying is, we don't say Rashi said. We say Rashi says, right? Because he's in the present here with us. Very nice. Thank
And
you.
thank you so much for this lesson. It'll take me weeks to get into my brain and my heart, but
If
it's
you
so
get it to your
amazing.
heart in weeks, I'm envious.
No, I'm saying to even
The
get
beginning,
under the
it's a
surface,
lifetime lesson, but
so
if you
deep.
can
Oh
do
my.
something in weeks, I am envious.
No, that was
Very
an
nice.
exaggeration. It couldn't be weeks. Nobody
Thank you.
could ever, you
Okay.
know.
Anybody else?
I have a
Okay.
question. I have a
Yes,
question.
go ahead.
I'm
Go
not sure
ahead.
how to ask it actually, but it's in my head somewhere, so I don't know how it'll come out. But why did Moshe Rabbeinu, it seemed like he did this ashes in the water, this potion or whatever you call it. He did it right after the Het Ha'Egel.
Right.
Why did he do that at that time? How does it relate to what you said?
It was before Pesach, right? It was in the second year after they came out of Mitzrayim, right? And he did it before Pesach on the second day of Nisan.
So
Okay.
that's why he knew to do that at that time to
Hashem told him.
so that's why he knows that hoke.
Now, obviously, what we said is not yet making us understand Parah. The Torah still says, Chazal tell us, that even Shlomo HaMelech did not understand it. We explain what we can understand, and what not what we can understand, but we can learn from it. The full depths of it, only Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, the fact that we explain doesn't mean this is all that there is. Okay, it's something that is beyond us. By itself, the fact that a mortal can be connected to Hashem is something that a human being cannot grasp and understand. Who am I to connect to the King of all kings, right? It's something that is beyond our comprehension, but Hashem granted to us. How it works, what it is, Moshe Rabbeinu knows. We don't know it. And that's only one aspect of it, right? So we are still in the dark. And it's important that we know that it's in the dark, meaning it's important to know that the depths of Torah is such that we cannot grasp it fully, but we are obligated to learn and understand what we can and internalize and live by it. But it's still something we don't understand. Okay, anybody else?
Eo was not Jewish, right? Eo was not Jewish, correct?
Most probably not.
And he had a
No,
whole
he
huge
wasn't.
sefer in Tanakh and all these things to learn from him. Hashem used him as an example to teach us.
Why not? You learn from wherever you can. On the other hand, our sages comparing to Abraham and show the difference, but he achieved a lot. Hashem himself says he was righteous and straight and special. Hashem, so to speak, showed him to the Satan and said, "Did you see Yo?" He
But he never
achieved
wanted to
what a
become
non-Jew
Jewish.
could achieve to the fullest. And we learn from anybody. But via the book, we learn also the different approach of a Jew towards suffering and a non-Jew, even though he achieved very great heights.
He never wanted to become a Jew, right? He was
No, it
satisfied to be a
wasn't his
guy.
job. It wasn't his job.
Okay.
Okay, anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay, so have a good week. Next week in Mirza Shem, we have two classes, one on Parsha and one on Pesach. And
Correct.
yes, Esther, am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. And this will be the last two classes before Pesach.
Oh
Okay,
no.
Parsha and then a class Wednesday, a class on Pesach in Mirza Shem.
Correct. Correct.
Okay, have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank
You
you
too.
so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Very welcome.